Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Ireland and other economies right across Europe and Asia are bracing for the impact of US tariffs, which are expected this Wednesday. With global power dynamics changing so quickly, how will this impact the European Union and the Transatlantic Alliance politically, economically and militarily? Well, I'm joined now by the director of the Centre on the United States and Europe and a senior fellow at the Brookings Institute, Dr. Constance Stelzenmüller, and she's addressing an audience in Dublin tomorrow, hosted by the Institute of International and European Affairs. Constance, good morning.
Good morning to you.
Can I ask you first of all about Ireland's exposure in all of this? I mean, we have over the years successfully positioned ourselves as the bridge into Europe for American big tech and pharma companies, but the foundations of that bridge look pretty shaky now, do you agree?
Well, yes. I mean, Ireland, sort of like my own country, Germany, is a highly globalised economy, deeply reliant on export, very open, integrated into global supply chains. And that works as long as your political and trade relationships with major powers are favourable. And right now, things are looking a little bit more rocky. We, as you know, Trump has declared that on Wednesday, April 2nd, will be what he calls Liberation Day, when he will impose large tariffs on the European Union. And of course, that will affect Ireland as a member of the EU.
Mm-hmm. And the tariff dispute, it'll be negotiated between Washington and Brussels. How sure can we be in Ireland that Brussels, Constance, will want to defend our Irish economic model? Because we know that many governments in Europe view this as being unfair to them.
Well, I mean, as a member of the European Union, Ireland has a right to being defended, right? It's literally handed its trade responsibility and powers to the EU. On the other hand, I think I'm not saying anything offensive when I say that Ireland has been quite clever at exploiting the freedoms that member states do have with its tax rules in attracting large US tech and pharmaceutical companies. And yes, there have been, as we all know, some fairly strong disputes between Dublin and Brussels. I think the irony here right now is that the pressure is now coming quite massively from the other side as well, with the President of the United States threatening to repatriate large American pharma and tech companies, wanting them to return their activities to America completely. And I think, you know, this is no longer just about technology or trade. This has become a political battle.
Mm-hmm. And do you expect...
So I think the EU would be somewhat more inclined, is what I'm saying, to think of the interests and the rights of the bloc and less inclined, shall we say, to pick fights with its own members.
Okay, it's like a family, isn't it? When someone picks a fight with the family will come together to defend itself, despite the fact
that
there
that
might...
depends on the family, but...
Well, there might be some disharmony in the family, but they tend to unite when someone from the outside comes to attack Constance.
Yeah.
I mean, do you think that there is back-channeling happening between Dublin and Berlin, even as we speak? Because there's a lot at stake here for Germany too.
Well, as you know, we currently have a caretaker government in Germany because we had elections on the 23rd. And the lead party of that caretaker government is in a coalition negotiations, rather intense ones, with the former opposition party, which will field the next chancellor. So I think their bandwidth is probably currently somewhat limited, but I have no doubt there are conversations going on.
Now, we hear from our own ministers, some of them at least, who say negotiation with the Americans is the way forward. But there are very loud voices in the EU saying very strong retaliation is the way to deal with this. It's the only way to deal with Donald Trump. Do you have a view on that, on what the right course of action is?
You know, I'm not a trade expert, and it seems to me that because everything is connected these days, that it would be the more diplomatically wise, clever approach for the Europeans to try and find a way of making peace with Donald Trump. But I think there comes a point, right? I think it depends on just how much he is even willing to talk and how vindictive these tariffs become and how destructive they are, right? Mm. And we haven't seen that yet. In the past, we have seen him threaten massive punitive tariffs. And then as soon as the European Union or others or the Chinese threaten their own countermeasures, then become amenable to negotiations or even withdraw. So frankly, I think these threats are only the opening volley, and we have no idea how the rest of the week is going to proceed.
We're also seeing the transatlantic military alliance, which has kept Western Europe safe for decades since the Second World War, is fracturing. Europe is rearming now. What do you think that means for a small neutral state like Ireland with our very limited military capabilities?
Well, it's funny you should ask. I've been given to understand to never, ever talk about Irish neutrality. But I speak a jest. But let me put it this way. I'm based in America, but I travel in Europe a lot. And I've been particularly interested in the dilemmas of countries that are either formally neutral or are members of NATO but not of the EU or vice versa. Because things can become quite difficult for them, given that, as I was saying earlier, President Trump uses threats of geoeconomic coercion, like trade tariffs, for political goals, right? So everything is now connected. And there is the other issue that the North Atlantic is no longer quite the, shall we say, safe zone that it was for decades. You have an American president laying claim to Greenland and to Canada, saying that the Arctic and the North Atlantic are contested spaces where America must stand up to Russia and to China. We also know that the exit route for the Russian nuclear submarine fleet is through the North Atlantic, because their Black Sea and Baltic routes are effectively cut off. And if I were Ireland, I would be looking at all this and wonder what that means for countries slightly farther down south. I do know that in the UK there is a heightened awareness. And of course, there is the matter of thousands of square miles that contain submarine cables and other important submarine assets that Ireland is theoretically, legally in charge of. And if I were Irish and looking at all this, I think I would say I would be having quiet conversations at the very least with my neighbours to see how one could come to a joint awareness, a shared awareness, and then figure out how to conceptualize safety in the region in a new way. Mm-hmm. Sorry, I'm being very diplomatic here.
Yeah, no, and I understand that and I appreciate that. But we know that there are other neutral countries in Europe who spend an awful lot of money on defence. Now, are you saying that we can still continue to rely on our neighbours, or do we need to ramp it up ourselves?
Well, I think having good relationships with your neighbours is always a good idea. And if the Europeans are now finding out that they have relied for many decades on America for their security, and that has been taken amiss, and they're being told in no uncertain terms to do better, right? So in that sense, already Ireland will find that its European neighbourhood is changing its attitude, and I think it would be worthwhile watching that and thinking about how to do this. But since you ask about other neighbours, Switzerland, of course, is also a neutral country, mm-hmm. and Switzerland has for example, won't let other countries re-export arms made in Switzerland. But in most other ways, its neutrality policy has been very pragmatic. For example, it has joined in European sanctions against Russia after the invasion of Ukraine in 2022. And it is working together with NATO in the context of the so-called Partnership for Peace. It is practically, its armed forces are practically interoperable with those of NATO. In other words, they could work together if they wanted to. And that's something the Swiss take very seriously. They're also writing their very first security strategy this year. So I think what I'm saying is that there are pragmatic, flexible ways of adapting neutrality to changing circumstances while not throwing that throwing the principle overboard.
Okay, it's an interesting view of what's ahead of us, perhaps. I just want to talk to you a little more about what's happening between Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin. I mean, we saw Donald Trump last night threatening to put tariffs on Russian oil and secondary tariffs too. Are we seeing the Trump-Putin relationship, bromance as some describe it, rupture at this stage?
Well, we've just seen Trump express irritation with Putin for the very first time, and annoyance. Because, of course, Trump has now for weeks been exhorting the Kremlin and Putin himself to make peace with Ukraine and to enter into ceasefire talks, instead of which the Russians have been brutally bombarding Ukraine every day, often several times a day, with significant casualties. And I think Putin is playing a very risky game here. On the one hand, stringing the White House along. On the other hand, I think showing it up as ineffectual. And I think Putin has to ask himself whether he really wants to lose an American president who has been remarkably willing to take his side so far. I think we're all watching this with bated breath, frankly.
Mm-hmm. And it is very unpredictable, isn't it?
Completely, yeah. I mean, one thing appears to be certain at this point is that the Russians are showing absolutely no sign of wanting to seriously engage in ceasefire talks, much less a lasting peace, much less a just peace.
It's very difficult, though, to read it, isn't it? Because we had Vladimir Putin making that speech late last week where he seemed to give Donald Trump a green light on Greenland, saying that there was a long-held and serious and deep historical roots between America and Greenland. And you just wonder what conversations are happening that we're not hearing about.
Well, indeed. I think that particular bit of revisionist history was news to the Greenlanders and to the Danes, who I think have been engaging Greenland for the past 600 years. I obviously can't speculate on things that we don't know about. But what has been notable is just how far the Trump White House has been willing to lean forwards towards the Kremlin, use their talking points, share their positions, make advance concessions even before the beginning of ceasefire talks. And I think there is a beginning sort of speculation, let me put it that way, in analytical circles, that perhaps the Trump White House sees a sort of global the Earth's future as a sort of tripartite condominium between the Americans, the Chinese, and the Russians, and that raises very serious questions of what that means for Europe, and indeed for Ireland, which again bringing us back to the question of the security situation of the North Atlantic. You look at that and you say, well, does that mean the Atlantic becomes sort of a fault line between the American and the Russian zone? And in that case, circumstances could change quite dramatically.
All right. Very big questions.
I mean, we're far away from that, but we're quite far away from that still. But these are the questions that are being quietly discussed.
And these are big questions which we will all have to face. Constance Stelzenmuller, thank you very much for joining us. And as I said, Dr. Stelzenmuller will be speaking at the Institute of International European Affairs here in Dublin tomorrow.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.